are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
Indians got to bring in Lou Brown, give him a little, give him the Willie Mays Hayes talk. That'll do the trick, I think.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
That is like fantastic advice. That's some of the best advice we've had on this podcast ever.
25 push-ups for every ball he hits in the air.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
I just want to see them stake him down at shortstop so he can't go on the other side.
Yeah, there you go.
I bet it'd still be amazing, though.
Yeah, probably.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst, friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Join me on this episode is Darius Austin. Darius, how you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing well, man. Really having a good time with Skype at the moment. But yeah, excited to talk some baseball, especially after we had an event here in London yesterday.
Yeah, definitely. You'll have to fill me in on a little bit of that off air. But you can go check out some of that stuff on the Bat Flips and Nerds Twitter account. I watched a couple of the Periscope videos, a bunch of you Brits hanging out on the 4th of July and watching the American baseball, or do some American baseball stuff.
Yeah, a little bit surreal, party in Hyde Park on the 4th of July with baseball and home run derby and Carlos Pena and Cliff Floyd. Yeah, all very strange, but it was a good time. And yeah, definitely go check out Batflips and Nerds if you're wondering what the hell was going on in London yesterday.
We definitely will. Joining us today is a special guest, Michael Beller of SI. Mike, how you doing?
I am doing well. Thanks for having me here on the pod, you guys.
Thank you for coming on. Thank you for being so patient through all our Skype issues. obviously, you know, the listeners don't get to enjoy it as much as we had, but it's been a little bit of a process this morning. But, Michael, why don't you tell people a little bit about yourself and where they can find you on social media?
So I write for Sports Illustrated, been writing for SI for about 7 years, so you can find me over there covering fantasy baseball, fantasy football, straight up regular baseball, and college basketball as well, and very active on Twitter at mbeller, B-E-L-L-E-R.
Nice, nice. Definitely go check out all his work over on SI, and you've got a podcast over there as well, right?
Yeah, that is a typically just a football thing, though, so we'll be coming back with that very soon for the football season.
All right. Awesome. Let's jump in. Let's talk some baseball. And I wanted to start it off with, you know, they announced who is going to be in the All-Star game and the home run derbies. And we talked a little bit on Monday about kind of the people who are going to be in the All-Star game, but we hadn't really talked about much about the home run derby. And there's always talk about people's swings getting messed up while they're in the derby. And I think there's anecdotal evidence at best to point to that. So, Michael, are you afraid of any of your fantasy players being in the home run derby?
I am not. I think that, as you said, we have some anecdotal examples, but there's no real reason why participating in a, even if you are in it for, even if you win the thing, a what? Maybe 70, 80 swing event in the middle of July is really going to have an impact on what you do the rest of the season. I think that a lot of what we've seen anecdotally also misses the point that a lot of guys who are in the home run derby are overperforming in the first half to begin with. So maybe it's just the matter of them coming back down to earth rather than some crazy swing path that they experimented with in the derby, completely felling what they do in the second half. So Aaron Judge owners, Cody Bellinger owners, Gary Sanchez, Miguel Sano, I would not be concerned whatsoever with any of those guys participating in the derby.
Darius, what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I completely agree with Michael. I think this is really just a function of if you take anybody who's had a hot first half, and that's obviously what most of the guys who get selected for the derby are, you're bound to get a bunch of them who regress in the second half. And so I think it's natural that we see players who have a perceived decline, and there's nothing really to the idea that they're getting messed up. And I'm sure if the individual players were worried about getting messed up, then they wouldn't have said yes to participating. I mean, it seems like every week we have a new video of Aaron Judge hitting another 500-foot home run in batting practice. I don't think this is going to be a huge difference for guys like him.
Yeah, I completely agree with you guys. And like I mentioned kind of in the lead-in, I think the majority of the evidence out there that kind of shows that there's an issue with this is pretty anecdotal, and it's pretty unfair. And I think, you know, one, I 100% agree with what Michael said in terms of typically guys are in the home run derby because they've had a really, really hot first half, and there's probably some regression to the mean coming for guys like Cody Bellinger, guys like Aaron Judge, and we talked about them as potential guys you may want to think about selling in redraft leagues to be in with on Monday. And so if you haven't listened to that episode, go back and check that out. But I'm not worried at all. I mean, especially a guy like Miguel Sano swings like he's in the home run derby all the time anyways. There's no real thought that he's going to hurt his massive power swing to begin with, just because he has a pretty exhausting one day for the home run derby. So I'm not worried about it at all. Let's go ahead and move on. Talk about a couple players. We're going to start with Marco Estrada, and he went from being one of those guys that was confounding people in terms of how he continued to perform so well in spite of some of the underlying metrics saying that he was going to regress hard, to regressing really, really hard. And he's getting blown up again today. He's already pitched 4 2/3, given up 2 home runs, 6 earned runs in the outing so far this morning. So, Michael, what are your thoughts on Marco Estrada? Is this regression to the mean or just a bad patch?
Yeah, my thoughts about him right now are that I'm very upset that I picked him up a couple weeks ago in my home league and gave him a spin through a couple of turns in the rotation. This one today, he was actually pretty clean through the first 3 innings, and then the Yankees got to him. I think that, you know, I mean, he became this guy who was always able to sort of outperform his natural stuff and outperform what some of the numbers would say about him, with FIPs up near or above 4 for most of the good stretch that he had at the end of his time with Milwaukee in the beginning here, first few years that he had with the Blue Jays. But I think that this is just, you know, sort of everything coming home to roost. You can only do that for so long. 33 years old now also, so starting to get a little bit old in terms of a major league pitcher, or at least getting into those mid-30s years where if the stuff abandons you, you might not be able really to rebound the way that he had been able to previously. So I don't have too high a hope for him, really, the rest of the season. I think what we've seen from him this year, we can take it face value. We can sort of say that even if it gets a little bit better, this basically is who he is. And maybe if I'm in a very deep league, an AL only or a 16 team or something like that, then he's someone who I've got around on my roster for spot starts or for the occasional start in a good matchup, but not someone who I think we're going to be trusting in most places for the rest of the season.
Darius, what are your thoughts on Marco Estrada for the rest of the year?
I actually kind of was interested in him as a buy low guy coming into June because his peripherals actually did look great for once and the performance hadn't really matched it. And then this has obviously been a horrendous month, and I think he had 15 walks in his last 15 innings before today, which is very uncharacteristic for him. And that's really got me concerned because that kind of lack of control, that's such an extreme lack, it kind of points to a more significant issue. I read an interesting thing on BP Toronto by Gideon Turk where he was talking about how he tried to get on top of the ball more. His release point has actually kind of come up quite a few inches, and he seems to think he's flying open a bit more than he used to, and that's maybe contributing to his lack of control. So if that's a mechanical issue that he's identified and he can fix, then maybe we can have a bit more hope for him going forwards. But right now it's extremely difficult to use him, and I certainly wonder just whether with the change in the balls and him already being a flyball pitcher, whether this is actually just kind of not as bad as this, but maybe we shouldn't expect him to perform at a really high level anymore, because when you give up that many fly balls and so many of those fly balls are getting out these days, I really have concerns about his long-term viability in fantasy.
Yeah, there's obviously something mechanically or health-wise going on with him. I mean, he's given up. He's only had, what, two homerless outings since May 6th. And he, like you mentioned, he's walking a ton more guys over the course of what his last three starts coming into today. He had walked 15 batters. I was a Marco Estrada guy coming into the year, and he seemed to be doing just fine, and things have gone wrong really, really fast. And like you mentioned, Darius, that it's really kind of all come apart over the course of the month of June. And it's not getting any better as we start July. I think you've got to drop him in the majority of formats. I don't think he's rosterable in 12-team, 10-team formats. Unless you are unscathed by underperformance or injuries to your pitching rotation in 15-team leagues, I think you have to really consider dropping him in leagues that size. Being in the park that he's in, he can't continue to put so many balls in the air and get away with it. He's almost given up after today, four home runs per nine at this point. And I just don't see – he's getting a little unlucky, I guess, in his strand rate, but it's not that bad. He's just really just getting crushed with homers and walks. So I don't see a ton to rally around at this point. Maybe he gets a mechanical adjustment. Maybe it goes down on, for a kind of a fake DL stint, and they can get things figured out. But this was supposed to be one of the Blue Jays' top trade pieces coming into the year if they weren't going to compete. And now it looks like he is virtually untradeable for them. So that sticks him, unfortunately, in Rogers Center long-term if he can't get things turned around very, very quickly. Let's move on and talk about Francisco Lindor, who's a guy who was taken very, very highly and has really, really underperformed so far this year. Darius, start with you this time. What are your thoughts on Francisco Lindor? Is he going to turn it around a little bit?
I think he will. I think he's too talented a guy not to, but I'm certainly not sure whether the way he's been hitting so far is the way for him to succeed long term. He's had a massive increase in his fly ball rate. He's up from 28.4% to 43.3%, which is obviously clearly a deliberate change. I don't think that kind of thing happens by accident. And his average has just tanked as a result. I think he might have been a little bit unlucky on the batting average and balls in play front. But when you do hit a lot of fly balls, that is probably going to be lower than league average. And he kind of had an approach before where you thought he was going to run maybe kind of a 320, 330 mark. The other thing I don't really like is that he hasn't run a lot and his speed still looks fine. The base running metrics look fine. That I looked at the Statcast new sprint speed stats and he's well above average on those as well. So I don't think the speed has gone away, but for some reason he's just not attempting. So I think he just needs to find the balance between the power and the average to kind of settle in as an elite shortstop. And I don't know if this is quite it. Maybe he needs to tone down the fly balls just a little bit you'll kind of maybe get a bit more what you hoped for early in the season, certainly bring that average back up towards 300. But whether he can make those adjustments this year or whether it will come next year, I'm not sure.
Michael, what are your thoughts on Francisco Lindor for the rest of the year?
Yeah, really shocked at the downturn that his numbers have taken. And I think it sort of speaks to him not being exactly sure what player the Indians need him to be. Do they need him to be like a middle of the order masher? I mean, are we seeing him try to make the same sort of turn that Matt Carpenter did, for example, a few years ago with the Cardinals when they lost Pujols and they lost Holiday and they needed someone else to step up and be a middle of the order guy who had some power? And, Matt Carpenter was able to do that, but it can be a harder transition for certain guys. And I wonder if something like that is what is troubling Lindor. I agree with what Darius said, though. We're talking about a guy who has all the talent in the world, who has already had a pretty impressive track record of success in the majors for someone who has, been up for basically at this point, two full seasons, even though it's been across 3 years. So having that track record, having the talent that he has, even if he is trying to make some change, got to believe that talent is ultimately going to shine through and get him to about the level that we expected. I think that going forward the rest of the year, I think we do see him be the guy that we all thought he was going to be coming into the season. Maybe he tones down on the fly balls. Obviously, that's what's holding down the batting average and really holding down the OBP as well. Walk rate basically in line with what it had been previously, a little bit lower, but nothing that's going to be a statistical driver of him having a lower OBP. So it's just all about the batting average for him right now. Whether he makes that adjustment or he doesn't, we just know that this is far too talented a guy to play this poorly all season. Someone who I certainly, if he was being made available in any league I was in, I would explore whatever sort of trades I could make for him.
Yeah, I think this is one of those guys that might be somewhat of a buy low, which is kind of becoming a more and more difficult thing to actually do, because I think people really got him for his speed and his batting average and haven't been able to tap into it. The 14 home runs are great, but when they come at the cost of two other categories that you were kind of banking on coming into the season, it can hurt quite a bit. I wasn't a fan of Lindor coming into the year because he's just not the profile necessarily of a guy that I typically go after in fantasy. But you have to think he's going to be better in this, and I agree with you guys. I think this has a lot to do with the fact that he's changed kind of his launch angle. I think a lot of guys have gotten a lot of information from the kind of the analytical departments of their teams, and I think some guys have put it to really good use. Alonso being one of those prime examples of a guy who kind of changed his launch angle and has found some real success. And I think some guys maybe are misinformed about the way they should be implementing it. And it appears to me that Lindor is a guy who's trying to put the ball in the air more and has changed his launch angle to do so. And it's kind of backfired, and he's having more of like a Ryan Schimpf effect where he's putting too many balls in the air, which means he's not utilizing his speed. He's not utilizing his other tools. You got to think at some point the Indians are going to sit him down and go, listen, you were a better player when you were, hitting line drives and putting the ball on the ground. He is getting a tad bit unlucky in terms of the BABIP, 250 BABIP, when he's been more of a career, 320 to 315 BABIP guy. But that won't change too much until he makes some adjustments to the plate. And so I'd be willing to bank that the Indians are a pretty smart organization in terms of their analytical department, and they'll help him maybe over the All-Star break in kind of changing some things around. So I would potentially try, especially if I'm looking to rebound in some of those, in the stolen base department and the average department. He's a guy that you might be able to go out and get at a reduced rate right now to help you out in the second half.
Indians got to bring in Lou Brown. Give him a little. Give him the Willie Mays Hayes talk. That'll do the trick, I think.
That is like fantastic advice. That's some of the best advice we've had on this podcast ever.
25 push-ups for every ball he hits in the air.
I just want to see them, stake him down at shortstop so he can't go on the other side.
Yeah, there you go.
I bet it'd still be amazing, though.
Yeah, probably.
It'd be really fun to watch, too.
Definitely.
Speaking of guys that have underperformed, I think we all knew that the regression monster was coming for Tanner Roark, but I don't necessarily think anybody thought he'd be as bad as he's been so far this season. Coming into the year, after his most recent start, he's got over 5 ERA. He's still striking out a decent amount of guys, but he's walking too many. He's giving up home runs again. Michael, what are your thoughts on Tanner Roark? Can he rebound?
Yeah, this is a guy who I didn't have much hope for coming into the season, and I'm not really too surprised with what we've seen from him this year. Just not really generating any sort of weak contact with any at the rate that a pitcher needs to be continuously successful, especially one like him who, even in his best days, was going to strike out about 1 in 5 batters that came to the plate. So this is someone who really needs to be smart in the strike zone, needs to be able to get guys to chase pitches to get that sort of weak contact, and just doesn't necessarily have the stuff to do that with consistency. Can he do it and pop up and have one good year or a couple of solid years? Yeah, and we've seen that from him, but ultimately you're going to have some bad years mixed in there too. And I think that's just what this is. I think this is a guy basically pitching to the low end of his realistic outcome range. And I really don't see any reason to think that on the balance of the rest of the season, it's going to change much. He'll have a good start here and there, and maybe he becomes a matchup guy in the fantasy world. But I just think that this is more the real Tanner Roark arc than what we saw in 2016.
Darius, do you believe this is the real Tanner Roark?
I think that the thing that's missing that's kind of characterized all of his success up to this point is the contact management. He's been a guy historically who's been very good at getting soft contract in sort of the Kyle Hendricks mold. Those guys were kind of at one and two at the top of the soft contact leaderboard last year. And this year he's got a 323 BABIP, which doesn't sound that high, but Roark's often been a long way below 300. Especially in his successful years, he's demonstrated the ability to get a poor contact from hitters, and that seems to have gone away. I can't see any differences in his velocity and his movement that would suggest he is easier to hit on a pitch-by-pitch basis, so I wonder whether he's having a sequencing issue or whether possibly he's actually tipping something, because the hard contact he's given up is so much higher than he has done in previous years. And the other thing that I thought might be seriously affecting a guy like Roark, who relies on a lot of called strikes, is the fact that now that Wilson Ramos has left, and he's being caught by Matt Wieters and Jose Lobaton, both of whom are below average framers. Wieters is actually almost dead last, I think, in framing stats this season. And I think that might be costing him a few strikes, and that's probably compounding the problems he's having this year. So I don't think that's necessarily going to change anytime soon. And so I wouldn't necessarily count on a major bounce back, but I would certainly watch out in Washington if they were to pick up a catcher with perhaps a better glove, then maybe he would start to improve a little bit.
You know, I hadn't heard anybody mention pitch tipping, but when you say that and I go over and I look over at like his pitch values over on Fangraphs, they're almost all much worse than they were last year. And so I almost wonder if he is giving something away or if there is some pitch mix issues, because I think, like I kind of said in the intro to him, we all expected him to take a step back. He wasn't going to be the guy who delivered a sub-3 ERA, but I don't think he's this bad. I mean, I think he's probably around, you know, an average starter in a 15-team league. Should be like a 4 ERA guy, and he's just getting absolutely crushed. And part of it is a little bit of bad luck. His BABIP is quite a bit higher than his career norm. But part of it, and he's also straining a much less guys than he has in the past. He's only straining 64%, where he typically hovers around 75-76%. But there's something wrong with the way people are either seeing him or the pitch mix framing issues that you mentioned potentially with a guy like Wieters and Lobaton. I'm not going to buy in on this because I don't think there's enough upside really for me to believe that he's going to bounce back in a way that it makes, you know, sense trying to buy in on a guy like this. But this is definitely a kind of a situation I'm going to watch, because I think he could be a useful streamer down the stretch if he could figure things out. You know, he plays in a pretty decent park in Washington, in one of the best divisions to pitch in the National League East, with all those kind of garbage offenses that reside there. And he pitches with one of the best offenses behind him, so he's going to get chances. You know, in spite of the fact he's got over five ERA, he's already won six games this year. And so, I mean, he's a guy that's going to win games just because the offense behind him is going to be good enough to support him. So he's a guy I'll monitor. I'll keep him on my watch list, and if he starts putting things together, I'll start adding him in as a streamer. But that's about as far as I'm willing to go with Tanner Roark. Let's talk about Jonathan Lucroy, because he's a guy that has kind of been a little confounding so far this year. He came in as one of the top three catchers off the board in fantasy this year, And now the rain, you know, he struggled a ton, and then he pulled a Miguel Montero this last week in criticizing his pitchers not being fast enough, and that's why he is not able to throw runners out. And now the reports that the Rangers are looking to trade him after giving up some of the best prospects in baseball in order to acquire him last year. Michael, what are your thoughts on Lucroy and then his eventual replacement, Robinson Chirinos, if he is traded?
Yeah, this is one that really is surprising to me, too. I wasn't really on him coming into the season just because I always feel like catchers are a little bit overpriced because of the false idol of positional scarcity. But I still thought Lucroy was going to be good and basically played to the level that he had the last few years. This is very surprising to see him hitting so poorly for a guy who basically, since he became a regular, certainly a fantasy regular, back with the Brewers, really in the second half of 2011, has pretty much been not only consistent, but getting slightly better year over year for the most part. So it's very surprising to see him, you know, suddenly just fall off to the degree that he has. But again, sort of like we talked about with Estrada, I got to think that with the numbers he's put up to this point, we sort of need to take him at face value and think that this is what he is going forward. It'll be interesting to see what does happen with him at the deadline. I would have to think that even though he has played so poorly, even though he sort of threw his staff under the bus recently, he would still be someone who is very highly sought after at the deadline should the Rangers make him available. So maybe it is a change of scenery that could do him well. Sort of be a red flag number two for me. The first one being the fact that, remember, a year ago he didn't want to join the Indians, who were clearly a postseason threat, and he blocked that trade for whatever reason. Sort of seemed weird for a guy trying to win. And then with what he's done in Texas this year, that's something that would be concerning too. But should he end up getting traded and opening the door for Chirinos, I think that could be very interesting. Obviously, we know catcher is an incredibly low barrier to entry, really every year, but especially this year, it has been a complete wasteland of a fantasy position. And with Chirinos, I mean, we know the power's there. The power is something he has always been able to do. It's basically all he has been able to do, but the pop is legit. And with the position being as scarce as it is this year, if you have someone who can be a one-category superstar, that might be enough. So that would be the most interesting thing to me with a Lucroy trade, not wherever he went, but what it would do for Chirinos and what it would do for the catcher pool as a whole.
Darius, where are your thoughts on Lucroy and Chirinos?
Yeah, Lucroy is just killing me. I own him in a 16-team two-catcher dynasty league that we're in together, and Martin Maldonado has been much better than him, which is not something I ever thought I would say. The way he's being pitched is fascinating to me, and it suggests that nobody really thinks he can do any damage anymore. He's got extremely high first strike percentage. He doesn't seem to be patient anymore. He's not getting himself into good counts. I think he's fourth in zone percentage, so it's getting thrown a ton of strikes. That's up with guys like Ben Revere, JJ Hardy, DeLon DeShields. So I think basically pitchers are pitching to him like they're not really worried about what he's going to do to them. And they're kind of right so far. He's hitting a ton of ground balls. His fly ball line drive exit velocity is down to 3 miles per hour. He's only hit 6 barrels all year. So there's nothing in the bat at the moment. And I wonder if there's maybe an injury behind this, because it's been going on for 3 months now. Ben Lindbergh did a really interesting piece about his framing, which showed kind of how much his glove has gone up, basically his average glove height. And he was speculating about whether there is something that's bothering him that's causing him not to be able to crouch as low. And possibly if that is, you know, maybe something to do with his back or his legs, then that might also be significantly affecting his swing. So there's a lot of red flags for me here. I don't like the comments that he made earlier in the week either, or we saw how well that turned out for Miguel Montero. It does make me wonder if he already kind of thinks he's on his way out of Texas, and maybe a change of scenery will help. But right now, I just don't see anything really to get encouraged about with Lucroy. And the only reason to really keep him is because of, you know, what Michael said about how much of a wasteland catcher is. And on that front, Chirinos is actually kind of an attractive option, because there is power there. He's kind of just doing the pull a ton of fly balls thing, and it's working for him. He's even better behind the plate than Luke Roy is right now. So I think the Rangers are probably pretty happy to slot him in because he will represent an upgrade at the moment, as crazy as that seems.
Yeah, I think there's got to be an injury. I mean, he's striking out only 10% of the time, which you would think, oh, man, that is kind of a little bit of vintage Luke Roy. But his walk rate is completely decreased. He's not putting hard contact out there. It's the lowest hard contact percentage of his career since 2011, and he is almost 13% less than he was last year in the hard contact percentage. He's not hitting very many fly balls. He's grounding out a ton. You got to think a guy like him who's had so many injury issues. And one of the reasons he didn't want to go to Cleveland last year is he was afraid the Indians were going to take him off catcher and DH him more in order to help save his body, and he was afraid that would hurt his free agency value next year. Well, unfortunately, this season has pretty much killed his free agency value, and I just don't know what the Rangers will really get for him. Maybe at this point with Giunos playing well enough, they don't really care. They just want to get rid of Luke Roy, but I can't imagine that goes over really well considering they traded Luis Ortiz and Lewis Brinson, two top prospects in the game, to go out and get him, Luke Roy last year. I think you're starting to talk about Luke Roy being droppable in 10 and 12 team formats, which is unfortunate for. The only place I drafted him this last year is when I filled in for Stefania Bell in Tout Wars head-to-head. and so I feel pretty bad about that one. I mean, I'm grateful it's not happening on any of my actual teams, but I feel bad that I kind of saddled her with him. But I think I think he's getting droppable in, to the point where he's droppable in 12-team mono catcher formats and even two catcher formats. Because at least other guys are, you know, guys like Chirinos are putting up power. I mean, Luke Roy is putting up a halfway decent average for a catcher at 259, but that's it. I mean, no counting stats to go along with an empty, mediocre batting average. So at this point, unless he shows some sort of signs of life here shortly, you've got to move on. Let's talk about Kevin Gausman, because this is a guy that I was huge all over. Hey, another guy that I purchased for Stefania Bell and Tout head-to-head.
Yeah. Nice work.
Yeah, along with Julio Teheran. Somehow she's managed to turn that into a third place in the standings so far. But
ahead of me.
Yeah, I mean, it's going okay, I guess. I guess, you know, maybe all of her players were bad at once, and she's been able to rebound a little bit since then. But he's been god-awful to start the year, but he's starting to show signs of life. He's put up two consecutive decent outings, and his last one against Tampa Bay was very, very good. So, Darius, are you buying a turnaround from Kevin Gausman?
I'm not sure I can jump in just yet. There's been a lot of very bad things this year. He hasn't been missing anywhere near as many bats. And speaking of guys allowing a lot of hard contact, Gausman's is off the charts. He's been crushed all over the park. So I don't think his BABIP, while it looks really high, I think this is kind of a bit of sort of Robbie Ray, Michael Pineda from last year, where they kind of had deserved extremely high BABIPs because they were giving up so much hard contact. So I'm kind of cautiously optimistic. The control and the command is coming around a bit. But I think while he's putting so many guys on base this year and I think he's struggling with sequencing issues and he's not quite found the recipe that makes it work for him. So, I'm keeping an eye on it. But he's been so bad in the first half generally that I don't think I'm going to jump in just yet.
Michael, are you buying back in on Gausman, or are you still staying away?
No, yeah, I pretty much echo everything Darius said. A couple of good starts. Sure, it's encouraging, probably mostly for the Orioles. Less so for fantasy owners, just because so many have probably dropped out on him. And even if they've held on to him, can't have too much confidence the rest of the way. The thing that concerns me is the splitter. I mean, anyone who's going to be a split guy is really going to have to get a lot of outs with it, going to have to be able to trust it, and he hasn't really been able to this season, and that's a pitch that really is a feel pitch. If you lose the touch on it, things can go really wrong really quickly, and I think we've seen that to a heavy degree with him this year. Still a guy who has plenty of talent, but it just hasn't translated. And the fact that, you know, now we've kind of been waiting on him for a few years to really break through. And sure, he's had some success, but not nearly the success that really everyone sort of assumed was basically coming, or as much as you can assume for a starting pitcher. And now we're talking about a guy who's still young, but in his age 26 season, basically his fifth full year in the majors, it gets to a point where you really need to recalibrate expectations in a big way. And I think we've reached it with Gausman.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, I've been a big Gausman guy for a long time, and I've talked about my love affair with him the last couple years, and I keep waiting for this guy to kind of put it all together. I really thought that this would be the season, but putting too many guys on base through the walk, and then getting crushed with a long ball. He's at least been a little bit better recently with not giving up. He hasn't given up a multi-homer game in quite a long time, but and no home runs in the last two starts. But I'm going to need to see a string of starts kind of together and get against maybe a little bit better offenses than Tampa Bay, which his last start came against, before I'm really willing to buy back in. I pretty much have dropped him off of my teams in anything except for AL only, where I feel I'm pretty much just stuck with him, unfortunately. But this is an encouraging run, but nothing I'm willing to kind of come back to the table and be like, okay, this is him turning around. Now, if I see him put together another, you know, two decent starts in a row, I'll feel a little bit better about it. But he's given up way too many home runs and given up way too many walks to be useful, especially in Camden, which heats up pretty well in the summertime. The balls tend to start really flying out of there. If he can't stop guys from getting walks and homers, it's going to be a real problem mid to late July and through August in Camden Yards, if that's the case. Let's talk about – we've talked about a lot of kind of players on the downswing, so let's talk about some players kind of up on the upswing, and we'll see if we buy a little bit of that. Orlando Arcia is a guy that is extremely hot right now. And really was kind of a forgotten man coming into the season. Michael, what are your thoughts on Orlando Arcia?
Yeah, one thing I love about him, you guys, is that he's going to get the opportunities. The glove is great, and that's going to keep him in the lineup pretty much every single day. And for guys like this, guys who are, relatively, or in his case, very young and who are going to need to build up as many plate appearances as they possibly can, build up their confidence. Just being in the lineup every single day is huge. It's half the battle for someone, I think, like him. So that's something I really like about him for the rest of the season, that the opportunity certainly going to be there, especially for a team like Milwaukee that isn't going to go away in the NL Central anytime soon. They need they've got plenty of offense elsewhere. They need their best defensive lineup out there, especially someone who's playing shortstop. So we know Arcia is going to get the opportunity from Craig Counsell. Now, whether he can keep up what we've seen from him recently, obviously that's a completely different discussion. But a guy who does have a pretty solid track record of minor league success, a really good year at the AA level in 2015, a good enough year at the AAA level, considering what he does in the field. So someone who, if I'm needy at shortstop, if I'm needy at a middle infield spot in leagues that use that as a starting position, I'm willing to give him the opportunity. There's a decent power-speed combo here. You could see him, I think, hit maybe 5 to 6 more homers and swipe 5, 6, 7 more bags the rest of the season. He's going to give you a little bit in both of those categories. I think he can keep the rates up enough. The walk rate, obviously, is going to be the one big knock against him. He's going to have to keep on having the batting average probably do the heavy lifting in the rate categories to keep him respectable in both of them. But with everything that he provides and with the fact that he is going to be in that lineup every single day, someone who I think is worth a look in pretty much all formats right now.
Darius, what are your thoughts on Arcia?
I'm probably going to have to be the negative guy here. I'm certainly excited. He's just 22. And yeah, as Michael said, the defensive skills are outstanding. He's made some really nice plays this year. So I think he's spot on that he'll get to stick in the lineup. But I think he's not really got this much power. I think he's probably been a little bit fortunate on that front. And the strikeouts have come down, but I don't think they've come down so much. I don't think his approach is good enough that he's going to hit close to 300 either. Based on his profile at the moment. The other thing that I'm a bit discouraged by is that the speed isn't really playing that well yet. I think he's 5 for 9 in steals. He doesn't rate all that well on the Statcast speed stats either, which surprised me. So I think maybe he's got a little bit to learn about base running in the majors. So obviously, long term, it's a fantastic proposition as a 22-year-old who's probably got a pretty regular fixture in the lineup for the next few years. But it's a guy who's hitting 8th as well. I think he's on a hot streak and certainly go ahead and ride him while he's on it. But I think this might also be a good time to sell high because I anticipate a few more struggles in the second half. And I certainly think both the power and the speed is going to regress. The average will regress fairly significantly.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you that I think the average will regress. I think it'll be livable, though. I don't think it's going to be one of those things where the bottom falls out on him. In terms of average, I think he's probably a 260 to 270 hitter rest of the way. And the power, he's probably not going to hit 16, 17 home runs for the year. But I think he could hit, 5, 6, 7 more home runs, especially in that park. And I think the speed will be there. And I think Arcia is a guy that people were really, really high on last year coming this season. I mean, there were so many people who we're talking about Arcia is a great guy to grab in redrafts and stash because, he could come up and have immediate playing time because of the defense and the Brewers love to steal. And then he came up, he struggled as a lot of young players do, and people completely dismissed him coming into this year, and there was a little bit of prospect fatigue. And I think he's showing that he belongs at the major league level. Like you guys both mentioned, fantastic defensive player. So you know he's going to be in the lineup. They even moved VR over to second base because they know that he's the future there at shortstop. I think that there's potential for him to steal another 10 bags rest of the way. Hit 5 to 6 home runs, do it at a 260 clip. And I think considering what you have to pay for him and what you paid for him on draft day, that's a pretty nice value at shortstop. He's a nice little middle infield guy or shortstop in a deeper league. So far, he's top 12 on the ESPN player rater at shortstop, and I think he got a nice little guy. Plus, he stole some guy's ice cream in the middle of the game. It was fantastic.
It was great.
Let's talk about Mike Clevinger of the Cleveland Indians, who has pitched fairly well during his major league stints throughout the year. Michael, what are your thoughts on Clevinger?
Yeah, I'm excited about him, guys, because I think no matter what, the strikeouts are going to stick around. Always had some pretty good strikeout numbers coming up through the minors, both in the Angels system when he was there and then in the Indian system. So I think the strikeouts are for real. Now, everything else that has been working for him is a completely different proposition, but we know how important. We're just talking straight fantasy here. This isn't a Cleveland Indians podcast where we're talking about the Indians prospects for the rest of the season. And in the fantasy world, those strikeouts are so much. And whether you are just doing raw strikeouts in your league, K per nine, or if you have an innings limit, which effectively is a K per nine, he is going to be someone who is an asset in that category. So I really am excited about what he has done to this point. I'm optimistic about what he can do in the second half. A couple of different pitches that he can go to with regularity to generate whiffs and to generate weak contact. I like his breaking balls. I like the changeup enough to lefties. So I do think that he is someone who is going to be a weapon just because we know or at least I think we can say that we know that the strikeouts are going to be something that he brings to the table every single start. You're not going to get a ton of clean outings. You're going to have to deal with some runs and some ugly outings in terms of whip, I would have to guess. But I do think that there's going to be more good than bad just because those strikeouts really do feel bankable the rest of the way.
Darius, what are your thoughts on Clevinger?
Yeah, he's a very interesting guy. I mean, this stat line sort of looks a bit Robbie Ray-ish, right? Too many walks, ton of strikeouts. Mm. I think he's extremely raw at the moment, and I'm not sure that he really knows what to do when he falls behind. I kind of saw that he might have had a bit of a split there, so I dug a bit deeper. And I know every pitcher is better when they're ahead and worse when they're behind in the count. But this is the most extreme I think I've ever seen. So when he gets ahead in the count, he's got a 378 OPS allowed. That's a 44 OPS plus, so he's 56% better than league average. If he falls behind, he's got a 1,141 OPS allowed. That's 129 OPS plus, so nearly 30% worse than league average. So basically, if he falls behind, he's done. He doesn't know what to do. He's incredibly likely to just walk the guy or get crushed. And if he gets ahead, I think his slider and his change are so good when he's pitching ahead in the count that it is a chasing him and just striking out. They've both got really high whiff percentages. So I think he's probably got a lot to learn on that front. And maybe if he can improve his fastball command and maybe get enough confidence to use those other pitches, even when he's behind, then he will improve there. But at the moment, I may be kind of trying to use him against lineups that I don't think have too much discipline, because I think anybody who's willing to take a few pitches is probably going to eat him alive.
Yeah, I've been a big Clevinger fan all season long, and I've been using him in a number of spots. He just walks way too many guys, and I think, unfortunately for him, in spite of the nice strikeout rate and the surface stats being fairly nice, I don't think he's got a role rest the way in the Indians' rotation. Danny Salazar is being brought back as a starter. He's on a minor league rehab assignment. He should be back here fairly soon, and for some reason they just refuse to put Josh Tomlin in the bullpen or get rid of him. And so unless there is an opening via injury, I think Clevinger gets sent back down, which is unfortunate. But I think in the meantime, and while he's in the rotation, he's worth kind of streaming for the strikeout upside and for the offense that's behind him. So you could probably pick up some wins as well. But I just think in the next by the end of July, Danny Santana is back, or not Danny Salazar is back in the rotation, and Clevinger is either in AAA or they move into a bullpen role. Let's talk about Anthony Rendon, because I think he is kind of being left out of the conversation in terms of elite third baseman this year, and he's been pretty fantastic for the most part, and quietly so in Washington. So Darius, what are your thoughts on Anthony Rendon?
Yeah, I love what he's doing. He's got incredible plate discipline. He's becoming extremely difficult to strike out. He was never that easy to strike out, but he's got even better on that front. And now he's also displaying 30 home run power, which is just a terrific combination. Kind of the issue with Rendon for a long time, I think, was that he just didn't have those counting stats that we looked for. And the speed has obviously tailed off over the years. But I think if he can be a 25 to 30 home run guy with this kind of plate discipline, then he's massively valuable. The other thing that I like is he has actually played for the last year and a half. He's essentially been an everyday player after so many years of struggling with injuries. So really good to see him still on the field. He's in a terrific lineup. I think this is definitely going to continue going forwards because his approach is just so good.
Michael, what are your thoughts on Rendon?
Total agreement. I've never been righter about a guy who I have less shares of in a season, because he's someone who I've always been a big fan of since that 2014 year when he showed what he could be. That what we're seeing him do here in 2017 was something that was, you know, within his reach, and I think that everything he has done is basically what we thought was going to be the high end of what he could be. And now that we're seeing it, I don't think there's any reason to bet against him being able to continue, especially when you've got, as Darius said, such great plate discipline, not just in being able to lay off chase pitches, but in being able to foul off tough pitches, to extend at bats, to take the walks when they're presented to him. One of the few guys in the majors with more walks than strikeouts at this point. Everything that he has done has really translated into him being this kind of player. And then when you add the power that he has shown this year to the mix, now you're really starting to talk about a superstar. So I think Anthony Rendon, great the rest of this year, going to be a huge fantasy player for years to come.
Yeah, I mean, he's walking 14% of the time. That's up from last year. Striking out less than he did last year, 13.7% of the time. You got to love what he's doing. You wish that maybe the speed translated a little bit more. He's just not running as much as he has been in the past. He's been caught a couple times on the base paths. But, I mean, that's really kind of nitpicking for a guy who's hitting virtually 300 and on a 30 home run pace at the third base position. He's doing it, like I said before, extremely quietly. No one's really giving him credit. And the base skills are all there. It's you know, for him, it's been a lot about health. He's had health issues all through his professional career and then back into college. One of the reasons why he wasn't taken first overall in the 2011 draft, fell to sixth to the Nationals, was there were a lot of health concerns coming out of Rice University. I love Rendon. I love what he's doing. One of the best lineups in baseball, like you guys mentioned. And he seems to really be putting it all back together. I think he's an attainable asset. You're obviously not going to buy low on a guy who's on a 30 home run pace with 300 average at third base, but I don't think you have to pay a huge price tag on a guy like Rendon if you want to go ahead and buy him. And he's still fairly young. He just turned 27 in June, so he's a guy that I'm definitely willing to buy if I need a little bit power, a little bit of pop, and don't want to pay huge prices for it. All right, let's finish out with Scott Feldman, who's people laughed at him when he was named the opening day starter in Cincinnati. And so far this year, he has been usable and fairly decent. Today may be Scott Feldman regression day at Coors Field, because I believe he is starting there in a few hours. But so far, so good. So, Darius, are you buying Scott Feldman?
To the extent that I think he's a fairly competent major league pitcher who you can definitely use in the right matchups, then yeah, I think so. Tonight obviously would not be one of them. But I mean, we're talking a guy who's pitched nearly 1,400 major league innings. I think he's somebody who's always kind of demonstrated the ability to maybe run a slightly above average BABIP. He's got 291 over those almost 1,400 innings. He's got a relatively high ground ball percentage, which I like to see in the era of everybody hitting the ball out of the park. And I think maybe he's just kind of a veteran guy who knows how to hit his spots. He's never had like the most mind-blowing strikeout stuff. So I think perhaps with everybody going out there trying to hit fly balls, he's kind of just the wily veteran who knows how to pitch to people hitting like that. And maybe this environment kind of benefits him a little bit. So I certainly don't expect anything exciting or spectacular, but I think he can be usable going forward. And possibly the Reds will look to trade him to somewhere which has a better ballpark as well. So that might be something to watch out for. So, yeah, I know no one's jumping out of their seat going wild over Scott Feldman, but I certainly think you can use him in the second half.
Michael, what are your thoughts on Feldman?
Yeah, you know, I really think I think Darius nailed it there. It's just it's a guy who knows what he is, knows what he wants to do when he gets out on the mound, knows how to attack pretty much every hitter in a lineup. He's not always going to be able to get them, but it's a guy who has a game plan and has racked up the number of innings that helps him execute that sort of game plan. So he's a matchup guy for me, a solid enough back end of a fantasy rotation starter the rest of the way. Not going to win you your league, but you need guys like that who you can turn to most of the times they come through the rotation and basically know what you're going to get out of them. And then I agree also with that he's sort of been the guy who has been mentioned at the trade deadline every year now for the past couple of seasons, whether he does end up getting dealt or not. If he gets traded to a team with maybe a slightly better ballpark, slightly better offense behind him, could help you out a little more than you're expecting in wins as well. But Scott Feldman, basically, what you see is what you get, and what you get, I think, is a back-end fantasy rotation guy the rest of the way.
Yeah, I think the regression monster is coming hard and coming fast. I think today may be the start of it being Coors Field and that being a place where you can get kind of hit around to begin with in the thin Rocky Mountain air. You know, in spite of the fact he's got the highest home run to fly ball rate he's had in over a decade, he's not really given up home runs at the rate he should be. And in spite of the fact he pitches in one of the worst ballparks for suppressing home runs, And part of that is he's getting some abnormally high infield fly balls. His infield fly ball percentage jumped to almost 4% this year. I think that's a little bit unlucky. I think he has been a little bit lucky with the ball staying in the park. I think if he can survive to the point where he can get moved at the deadline to a better location, maybe that helps him out. But I've never been a Scott Feldman fan. I think this is just a disaster waiting to happen. And while he is kind of a little bit of a wily veteran, like you guys mentioned, I think regression is going to come fast and hard, and I don't want to have any part of it when it being on my team. So if I'm wrong, I'll let someone else, you know, reap the rewards of that back end starter, but he's not one I'm willing to risk. All right, that is going to wrap us up for this episode. Thank you, Michael, for joining us.
Absolutely, guys. It was fun. Thanks for having me.
Definitely. Why don't you remind people again where you can reach on social media and give yourself some plugs, tell people what you're working on and where they can read all your stuff.
Yeah, SI.com is where you can find me. Working on a lot of straight MLB stories in addition to the fantasy, and I'll be doing a lot of fantasy football starting in the next couple of weeks or so. And on Twitter, you can get me at MBeller.
All right, Darius, where you work? What are you working on? Where can people reach you?
So you can find me on Twitter at DariusA64. As I mentioned at the top, lots of fun stuff going on at Batflips and Nerds with the MLB home run derby we had in London yesterday. So, go to batflipsandnerds.com or batflips_nerds on Twitter for all of that. And I'll also have another monthly exit velocity report coming over at Fantasy Pros, hopefully tomorrow. So watch out for that one as well.
Nice. You can reach me on Twitter at Justin Mason, FWFB. Email me or the show, friendsfantasybenefits@gmail.com. You can read all my baseball stuff over on Fangraphs, where I write 4 to 5 times a week. Had 2 articles go up today. My usual wrote a write-up for the morning that talked about a bunch of kind of fun small samples in the month of June. Some that were pretty interesting, and then I did a review of my bold predictions article, and that just went up a little while ago, about an hour ago, over on Fangraphs. So definitely go check both of those things out. You can read the rest of the stuff I write on friendsoffantasybenefits.com and hear me on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network Thursdays with Lore Michaels for the Tout Wars Hour, Thursdays 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. That's going to wrap us up for this episode. From Michael, Darius, and myself, thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season.